You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Well, it's Monday night, and I'm staring at my computer screen again, but I'm staring at a certain assemblage of people, so it must be another edition of the Massive Report podcast. Patrick Murphy is here, Ori Gunatar, Pat, or Bart Logan, I'm sorry. There's no Pat Logan. And Alex Stanek, there we go. Welcome, guys. How are we doing?
I think that it was my fault that the crew played poorly, well, relatively poorly last week, since I wasn't on the show on Monday, so I apologize for that and made sure I was here this week.
It seems like a long time ago since that match, and that's good. A little rest, I think, will go a long way, and we'll talk about the Minnesota United game tomorrow night on ESPN at 8 o'clock as the crew move into the knockout stage. But first, a look back to Crew 1, Atlanta nothing. Frank DeBoer is shown the door in Atlanta. There were many social media groups dedicated to his ouster, and they got their wish. They were a whiny bunch, though. We'll talk about that a little, but it's certainly not our focus. I think our focus here is being really concerned about Mokhtar. He scores, the team looks sharp, and then he leaves with an injury, and it seemed to really take the air out of the side. What do we know about Mokhtar's injury and his status for tomorrow night?
Well, it certainly didn't look good at the time. I mean, the play was rather innocuous, you know, on TV at least. You know, I didn't even realize he was down at first, and they come back and they showed the replay, and, you know, it looked like he just, you know, a standard, you know, I fell down and I need a minute to get back up. And in fact, when I went back and watched it after the game, I still couldn't tell, you know, what exactly happened, but sometimes those can be the worst injuries, as we know. You know, Caleb Porter said after the game that he expected him to most likely miss this game against Minnesota, which is still the case. I don't expect him to play tomorrow, but any further than that, I don't think they know quite yet, or at least they aren't telling because they haven't been as forthcoming as normal with injuries since they've been in the bubble. But yeah, I wouldn't expect him for tomorrow. You know, I think he obviously pulled or you know, irritated some sort of muscle there. You saw the trainers had to help him walking off the field and whatnot. So that's never something you want to see. He did stay on the sidelines. I noticed later in the game he was kind of sitting on the grass, but I don't think that's indicative of how serious or not the injury is. And we obviously know Vito Wormhoor had to go home back to Columbus when his injury was obviously serious. So we'll see if we find out anything more about Eunice. Caleb's been a little more forthcoming about injuries after the games. So we'll see if they win tomorrow. Like last week, he told us that there was the ankle injury that Lucas Zelrayon had been battling and things like that. So maybe we'll get more after the game on what's going on. But I do not expect you to see him tomorrow night against Minnesota.
Eloy Room did not play with an injury issue last week. Could he have played if it was a knockout game, and will he play tomorrow? Anybody speak to that?
I think Eloy Room is probably going to be a no. I'm sure, right, Pat? He's pretty sure going to be a no.
Yeah, like, I mean, it sounded like they were expecting at least two games from him, and that Tarbell would get at least those run and see how far this team goes.
Yeah, so it'll probably be Tarbell in between the sticks tomorrow against Minnesota, and then Mokhtar probably is not going to start. And then in terms of if you're thinking of the starting lineup from the first game against Cincinnati, everybody obviously no Vito, but everybody else probably should be available. But I would probably expect maybe some fullback rotation for Tuesday's game, but obviously we'll be getting into that later on.
Well, we did get good goalkeeping from the backup, and you always kind of bite your nails when a new guy drops between the pipes, certainly an experienced player. But other than one misplayed ball that he got under control, I didn't notice anything that really bothered me too much. Do you guys feel confident with him going forward in a knockout game, Bart?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he looked like he had a stronger Tarbell performance than you saw at the other end from Brad Guzan. And you know, this is a guy who's had some success as well at the MLS level before. The team and Caleb Porter have obviously held him in pretty high regard. And yet I think there's a good chance that we maybe would have seen a piece of him in that knockout or in that group stage, regardless if Room had gone down, because he just wanted, especially in this shortened season, you want to see what you have from players in case somebody goes down and you've got an X-man-up situation. That's what they've got right now. But Tarbell certainly was not the weak link for the crew. He was the top-rated player for Columbus. Again, a couple on who scored, a couple nice saves on offset pieces where Atlanta generated, I think, the most of their attack in that game. So I'm not too worried with this team and Tarbell between the sticks for this knockout game against Minnesota.
And we're feeling confident in the defense as well, and especially after Mokhtar went down and the game kind of slowed down, the defense stepped up to keep the clean sheet. Do we see a veteran presence in Josh Williams tomorrow? He's been looking good. Or is Does Bubba slip back into the lineup for this one? I'm guessing, just my guess is that we see Josh Williams because I think he's going to lean towards experience. Right, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I think also from a rotation standpoint, you want to get a guy like Williams some minutes. And, yeah, I think you'll want, especially once you start getting into these later games, you'll want more of that kind of tournament mentality, experienced lineup in there. So I would definitely go with Williams personally. But, you know, Porter's one of those guys, I think, where it's going to depend on how well these players are doing in training. You know, if he feels that Bubakar is having a good tournament, you know, maybe he sticks with him and just says, you know, let's go with that. But, if I were Caleb Porter, I would definitely go with Josh Williams.
I think it'll probably also depend on how they view the matchup. You know, I think with New York, I don't think you were too concerned about the speed. I think that's what Abubakar Keita gives you, is a little bit more of that athleticism. Josh Williams is the more experienced, intelligent player, better positioning and whatnot. And, you know, I think for now, and unless one of those guys really cements himself, I think they're going to kind of play the matchups a little bit. And if they feel like they need Keita out there to match up with someone running in behind or things like that, they will. But I think you need to give a lot of credit here to Jonathan Mensah, who has organized this back line tremendously. And it's crazy to think about a few years ago when he first arrived, the struggles that he had with how well he played second half of last year, once they kind of got a back line together and, you know, leading a young group of guys. And then this year with how they've started and, you know, only conceding one goal from a penalty kick and whatnot. You know, not only the captain, but he's really controlled that back line. It seems whoever's next to him plays well, and I think he just deserves credit for that.
Is there anything else from this Atlanta game that stands out before we put it to bed? Like I said, it just seems like such a long time ago for some reason. It was fine. It was a good performance. They did what they needed to do. Anybody stand out? Well, Darlington Nagbe, obviously. I mean, had another great game.
We've touched on Darlington and what he gives. I do think going back to the Eunice injury, it gives a little bit of question about what you do going forward here in this game. You know, we've talked before, Caleb likes to have one winger that stretches the defense, and that seems to be either Luis Diaz or Derek Etienne, and then a pocket guy, as he calls it, a guy who kind of tucks in like Justin Merrim used to do, and that tends to be Pedro Santos or Yunus Mokhtar. And Yunus Mokhtar was playing really well. You saw him do that exact thing on the goal, but he was also combining in both games he's played. So an unfortunate thing, but, you know, now if you obviously still have Pedro, so you can play him in that role. But if you want to rotate, as we saw Pedro move into the number 10 role when Lucas didn't start, you're a little hamstrung a bit. Now you can play with two, you know, fast wingers and you know, try and stretch the defense on either side. It's just not preferable. So I think this injury, if it lasts more than this game and the crew keep advancing, you know, it could affect how much they can rotate, you know, how much they can limit Lucas Zelarayán's minutes. Do they have to, you know, maybe play a Darlington Nagbe, push him further up the field if you do need to rotate or things like that. So, you know, it's a position they have a little bit of depth in, but if you kind of go beyond those first couple guys, there are some question marks as to what you do now that you've lost kind of a key piece there.
Yeah, and one player that I kind of wanted to sing his praises a little more, I was doing it on Twitter throughout the Atlanta game, was Luis Diaz. Even though he didn't score or get an assist in the game, and he did get a yellow, I just liked his effort throughout the entire match. I just liked the way that he plays. He runs at defenders, and I can recall probably around late in the second half, around the 75th or 80th minute, he comes all the way back on defense. He gets the ball back, and then he's just running down the right wing, all guns blazing. And that was kind of – Luis Diaz for me was one of the few players in the second half of that Atlanta game that kind of was still playing like it was the first half, because the Crew played well in the first half. They were energetic. You know, we'd seen four halves like that from them in the first two games. But that sixth half in the second half against Atlanta was really probably their worst half of the tournament thus far. There was a little bit more of a relaxed feel. They were – their passing was not nearly as good, but – Luis Diaz stood out for me in that second half with his effort coming back on defense to win the ball back and then just deciding, screw it, I'm just going to run and try and score a goal or get a cross in. So I'd really like to see him start in the Minnesota game, but even if he doesn't start, he's a great impact sub to bring off the bench if defenders are getting tired, and who knows if we need him for a penalty shootout.
He took a shot, too, from like 25 yards out in the second half, and tested Brad Guzan, which I thought was an incredibly disrespectful shot, which I love to see because Brad Guzan at this point deserves zero respect because he's terrible. Mm-hmm. So I love to see that disrespect from Diaz. I thought that was good. I thought Adi sucked, but other than that, I thought it was a good performance from the Crew.
Mm-hmm. I think
I'm still on the hate train, guys.
Well, I think the one thing with Adi, and I agree with you, Alex. That was a poor performance. He didn't look up for it at all. So this isn't to take anything away from that. But I do think, you know, he did miss some training at the beginning of this tournament when he was dealing with an injury, similar with Pedro Santos and Milton Valenzuela. So I'm wondering just like how much time he's actually gotten with a lot of these guys. Obviously, he was there for most of preseason. But like there was one pass where he just did it. It looked like he was thinking he should check back and the ball went over the top. And it was, you know, it looked really bad. And also he's not Giassi Zardes. He's not going to chase balls. He's not going to press like that. So I think they also have to recognize when he's in the game, you have to play more of a true target forward than you would with Giassi out there. But yeah, it was not pleasing on the eyes once he entered the game. Not that the game was that great beforehand, but he did not impress, I don't think.
Well, I like Diaz's shot, going back to that for a sec, because it reminded me of the one he scored on against Cincinnati last year down at Nippert Stadium. I think the one at Nippert was a little bit further out, but I don't mind that at all. I think if there's one thing, and we'll kind of talk about the other observations that we've had in this tournament, but if I have one, too many guys in this league pass up shots, and it's really irritating as just someone who wants to watch a good game, and everybody's looking for that one pass that's going to lead to a tap in. All these teams need to shoot the ball a lot more. I've not been impressed by most of the sides in this tournament. Columbus Crew certainly stand out as a class team at this point. And we'll get to more of that later. So we'll close the door with DeBoer being fired. I have no idea who they're going to bring in. It's kind of a weird time to bring in a manager. Alex has an idea.
Well, I just wanted to call out that Major League Soccer tweeted out a list of their potential head coaches. And on that list was Mauricio Pochettino, who is currently coach of Tottenham Hotspur and has turned down Barcelona.
He's not the current coach.
He was fired at Tottenham.
Okay. Well, he's turned down like very large coaching jobs. And the idea that he's going to like turn down Inter Milan, but then go to Atlanta United is, even by MLS Twitter standards, like it's bad. Like I don't know why the league has to constantly do this where they're like, Cristiano Ronaldo's out of contract. Is he coming to Major League Soccer? No. Like, please just have a little bit of self-respect.
Yeah, I saw Grant Wall tweeted.
I was going to say that, Pat, yeah.
the Leeds United coach who just brought them back to the Premier League for the first time. And
Marcelo Bielsa.
Yeah. In however long it's been. And it was like, get to coach in the Premier League with one of the most historic English clubs, even though they haven't been great in some time, or come coach Atlanta United on a football field playing on turf.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, the entitled bunch of Atlanta fans will only expect that one of the two will be their coach, and they are going to whine about it endlessly if they don't get their man. That I do know. They've suffered for such a long time.
Yeah, I hope they get the assistant coach from Philadelphia Union, who was also on that short list with Pochettino. I hope that's the guy that they go from Pochettino to assistant for the Philly Union.
Yeah.
I missed some of that. I hope we are talking about Sam Allardyce, who's obviously the top choice for
that. I mean, hey, Sam Allardyce has 100% record as England manager in one game, so I think he would be the man for the job for Atlanta.
Sure. Atlanta has so many great candidates to choose from. It's unbelievable. What an enviable situation to be in. There's no question. All right, let's look ahead to Minnesota. As Crew fans, the first guy we're going to ask about is Ethan Finley. And I still miss him. He was one of my favorites when he was on the club. He's a nice guy. It seems like he's fit in very well there. It's his home territory. And I have not had a chance to see Minnesota play at all in this tournament. I don't know if anybody here has. I'm sure somebody has. Give me a thought on Ethan Finley if you have one, and let's dive into the roster and see what we're going to have to deal with tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of MLS's back, Minnesota have been sort of a middle ground team. Got started off with an amazing comeback victory over Sporting Kansas City, scoring, you know, getting an own goal, and then Kevin Molino scoring also in stoppage time to get a victory. But since then, it's been two draws, nil-nil with RSL, and then Ethan Finley basically single-handedly getting a draw against Colorado with two goals in the first half. But Caleb Porter said it in the press conference, this is the toughest game they've had all season, and he's correct. Minnesota is still an unbeaten team, and their two games in the regular season, they were dominant, beating Portland and San Jose on the road, 3-1 against the Timbers, 5-2 against the Earthquakes. So, and that's kind of something I think I mentioned last podcast, where it's like with RSL, you kind of know their style and you know they're going to defend well and maybe not score too many goals. With SKC, you know they have a pretty good offense. Minnesota is a team that's kind of up and down. They can either just batter you with a bunch of goals, or their offense can just explode if Kevin Molino and Ethan Finley are going to be playing together in that game. So I think this game has the possibility to have anything happen. Whereas when Columbus goes and plays Cincinnati, you know Columbus is going to win. So it'll be interesting to see. But Minnesota haven't been the best team at this tournament, but they haven't been the worst either.
What do we think of their goalkeeper, Tyler Miller?
He had that huge mistake right in front of Greg Berhalter in their first game, which was really funny. a guy who is hoping to, you know, one day make the national team. But he's a solid keeper. I mean, you know, I think he was with LAFC, right, before – he ended up there and played well for them. Not somebody that I think you have to be overly concerned about, but, you know, a good shot stopper. I think he's probably, you know, we've only seen a little bit of Tarbell, but I think he's in that category of like those next tier of American goalkeepers where there's, you know, a whole handful of guys that could go behind the usual suspects we see with the national team. And I think he's in with that. And I'm not saying Tarball's at that level at this point, but he was thought about at that when he was doing well with San Jose. So a good keeper. And yeah, I agree with Ori that this has been an inconsistent team. I do really like what Ethan Finley gives them though. Similar to what he did with the Crew, you know, always looking to run in behind and whatnot. But I think he's added to his game. The finish he had on the first goal the other day, he made a near post run on a corner and just like a nice little flick that beat the keeper near post, things like that you didn't see as much when he was in Columbus. So that'll be fun. I'm sure he's going to be motivated. You know, he still has a lot of friends that are on this team. And you know, obviously it's always good to get one over on your old side.
And you mentioned the Trinidad national Kevin Molino. He's part of their national team program as well. He's another guy that you definitely have to account for, the 30-year-old. Is there a guy or an area of the Minnesota United team that the Crew will look to attack? Much like when young Berhalter started and New York went after him, is there a player or two that we can focus on trying to attack?
Well, their center backs, you know, Aiko Parra, you know, who's a multi-time MLS Defender of the Year, isn't in the bubble. So, you know, I think that, you know, we've seen, and if you've watched them in this tournament, they're liable to give up goals. So I think you look at that, attacking that back line, similar to some of the balls we've seen played in behind the Jossie Zardes, you know, those balls from, you know, whoever it is, Lucas El Rey on in the first game played the one that he finished. Passes like that, testing these center backs that aren't maybe of the quality that Minnesota is used to. Now they have had multiple games here. Jose Aja, I think, is the new center back who has stepped in for Opara, and he's been in the league before. A solid player, but he's just not quite, you know, that same level. So I think they're somewhat vulnerable in comparison to Minnesota teams we've seen in the past.
They're also, just in glancing at their roster, they look, and I don't know what their average age is, but they look to be one of the older teams in the league as well. And playing in this heat, that could be a factor.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that, you know, this is a group that they kind of put together to try and make things right after the first year was so poor at Minnesota. So they did go with some more experienced guys. And yeah, I think that, you know, you never know how the heat's going to affect people, but it's certainly older teams are going to deal with it a little bit more, tired legs and whatnot. And they also have, correct me if I'm wrong, Rory, but they have less time off. The Crew had an extra couple days between their last game.
Yeah, Minnesota last played Wednesday, so Minnesota just have one less off day. And then I just was looking up the average ages. So this article was written right at the end of February for the 2020 rosters. Minnesota's average age is around 26.3, so they're in the top 10 in the league. Columbus is actually the second oldest team at 26.9, with Columbus having the highest median age of 28.5. Minnesota in fourth at 26.8, Cincy third, SKC second for oldest median age team. And then for average age, it's Portland, Columbus, Cincy, SKC, and Seattle.
Well, I certainly wasn't trying to be ageist as the old part of the podcast. Harrison did just turn 34 the other day, so that certainly raised the average. Happy birthday to Harrison, who still plays like a much younger man. There's no question. Let's put together a lineup for the Crew, how we see it happening tomorrow night. We've already established the goalie. Let's start at the back. Do we have a consensus on the four gentlemen that we'll see starting the match tomorrow?
I sure think you're going to see something, you know, close to an ideal starting 11 for Caleb Porter. I think you're going to probably see Milton Valenzuela back in. And, of course, he, you know, for a guy who was nowhere to be seen in those first two games, wasn't even in the 18 for the first game of that group stage. He looked pretty solid, although he did get yellow, I believe. In that game Tuesday, but great ball to Yunus on the finish of that 19 pass, just a triumph for Crew on the single goal. And I think you'll likely see him. Jonathan Mensah, there's not a chance as long as he's healthy. Caleb Porter's going to be keeping him in, and I wouldn't be surprised, especially with Wormhoor down, that if he doesn't play every single minute for Crew for the rest of this tournament. I think the question mark, real big question mark you have left is at that other center back position. And I'm in your camp there, Brian and Alex and Ori, that Josh Williams, I think, you know, in addition to looking good there, I think he brings that experience that that you want in a knockout game. And Harrison Offal is as good as Chris Cadden looked. I think if Harrison Offal's ready to go, you go with him if you're Caleb Porter.
Are we all cool with that?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Mensah's going to be the only guy that plays every minute in this tournament for Columbus. That's pretty much a guarantee. And then whoever starts at center back with him, I'm excited to see if Santos and Zelarayán start again. I'd love to see that because I think the two of them together makes this team really, really dangerous.
Yeah, I would love to see that. Obviously, I think we know that Artur and Nagby are going to be in the starting 11. Their positions are solidified and they're working together very well. Lucas didn't start. That was just a maintenance thing. There's no injury issue with him. And it was a great decision because he's going to be fresher. And now that we're in the knockout, we're going to need him for the vast majority of this game. We're going to need him to score a goal. I think we agree on that.
Brian, real quick, you touched on Nagby and Artur. And I think that that's an, you know, I mean, I think those of us who have watched all the games closely have appreciated that. But their partnership, and let's remember, Artur came in, was playing alongside Will Trapp that first year and looked really good. And then these last couple of years have been, he's been fine, but he just, it seemed like he never took off on the trajectory that everyone expected him to. This year playing alongside Nagby, and, you know, credit Nagby, but also credit Artur's work to fit into the way Caleb Porter wants him to play. You know, he's a bit more of a destroyer is the term I keep using, you know, going and breaking up attacks and things like that, which this team hasn't really had since Tony Chani was kind of that guy for a while. So these two seem to complement each other really well. Artur has been overshadowed because of Nagby's possession, but he's been very good on the ball. He's not the dribbler that Nagby is and whatnot, but just making the right passes, smart. I just think that these two have fit together really nicely, and it's cool to see because I don't know if we would have said that before the season started, especially when Will Trapp was still on this team, that these two would be arguably part of the best central midfield combination in the league right now.
I mean, but not compared to LAFC, you know, like, I'll take two of LAFC's trio over Artur and Nagby, Taylor Twellman. But I agree with you, Pat. And I think part of it is this, they're much more complementary skill sets than you have with Will Trapp. And Artur back there where, you know, now Artur can kind of slot into the more traditional six role where Nagby can go in that eight box-to-box role. And with Will Trapp there, he had two both kind of, you know, defensively inclined midfielders, if you will. So I think they're just really good complementary, and that's a great person for Artur to be learning off of too. And you've seen that he's gotten a little bit more involved, and he's played, you know, some nice balls too. So I think that's it's been a terrific combo, and you know, maybe one day they'll get the respect of LAFC's trio, but that day isn't today.
Since we're not going to see Mokhtar, and we kind of touched on it earlier, who are we going to see?
I think it's got to be Pedro Santos. I think Etienne, for his skill, I think Ori and Pat have touched on it. I don't think Caleb's going to try to stretch it on both sides. Have Pedro Santos be in there. And it'll be interesting to see because, Crew really generated the majority, or at least the plurality of their attack from the right side of the field last game. And so it'll be interesting, you know, if Pedro Santos does slot in there, what we've seen a lot of times is that he'll kind of, you know, suck up the ball and the play will be kind of around where he is. And so it'll be interesting if it kind of slows things down a bit and you see, you know, him and Lucas Zelarayán playing off each other. And then maybe as they're absorbing some of that attention, that gives opportunities for someone with the speed and the elusiveness of Luis Diaz to get open and create some damage, as well as Yossi Zardes, obviously. But I don't think he's going to be going unnoticed for any of these back lines.
Yeah, I think knowing what we know about who's available and who's not, it's pretty obvious who's going to start this match tomorrow. And I expect him to play more minutes. And there's always the possibility that we go to a shootout as well. Who is a guy that maybe you're not, that we're not thinking about, who could be slotted into a tie game late for that reason in particular? Is there somebody off the bench that maybe doesn't play a whole lot that you would want to see taking penalties.
I'm going to go out there and say Fernando Adi. I feel like he might have a penalty in him in a shootout potentially if Caleb wants. But here's the thing that we have to remember, though. It's not extra time. So when you make that substitution at the end of the second half, most of the time when you get to the 25th, 26th minute of extra time, people are making those subs for the shootout. They're not making the subs to try and win the game in extra time. You need to make the subs both to potentially try and win the game in the 85th, 86th minute and think about the shootout as well. So
that's an excellent point, Ari. Yeah.
So whether or not you want to bring in Fernando Adi to try and win you the game late on, that's up to see if that's the decision. I wouldn't make that decision personally, but he might have a penalty in him. I think you have to keep Zellerey on in there as well, but I think we'll likely see the more experienced guys coming off the bench if Caleb Porter is thinking about the shootout. But based on how he's been talking in press conferences, one game at a time kind of thing, I think the subs he will make will be to try and win the game. So
that's why, for me,
we could see like a Derek Etienne start and then maybe bring Luis Diaz off the bench for that extra speed. So I'm very interested to see that.
Yeah, I think maybe I posted my question the opposite of what it should have been. The question should be who is going to play the whole game that may not play the whole game, but only because they are that person that he wants in the batting order and the shootout. Now, hopefully it doesn't come to that. We win the game in regular time. Nobody wants to see a shootout here. There's just too many variables that are out of your hands. So
I do wish you had Vito Wormhoor for this, though, because that's, he's a center back, but by all accounts, I mean by several YouTube highlight videos I watched when they signed him, he's actually pretty cash money from the spot. So that's a loss from that center back position where you're not guaranteed too much when you've got one going up there to take it.
Don't sell yourself short, Bart. That's more scouting than most Major League Soccer teams do. So you're in I think if you're talking about like a dark horse kind of player to bring off the bench to take a penalty, if I'm the coach, if I'm Caleb Porter, I'm going over and I'm tapping Hector Jimenez and I'm saying, Hector, I know you've got one in you. He is calm as can be. He's been there, done that with Major League Soccer. He would not get butterflies at the spot in, a knockout game of the COVID Cup. He would be totally calm and collected and would bury that thing. I would bring him off the bench before I'd bring off Fernando Adi, because, again, I'm an Adi hater. But Hector's my guy, so I think Hector would get it done.
Wow. Well, I think we've covered every possible scenario here. We're not going to talk about the possibility of losing. I don't see it happening.
I think there's one more scenario, Brian, and that is if MLS decides to just like switch things up again and see, because originally didn't this bracket get switched in the mid between the group stage and this knockout
round? You don't
round?
Know the half of it. As the guy that makes the graphics for this website, it was driving me crazy how many times they were flipping the bracket. I make the bracket, I feel, and I see Columbus's half, and it's like, okay, we'll maybe play San Jose or RSL. And then in the semis, it's like, maybe Philly or SKC. No, they changed it. So now in the semifinals, if the Crew make the semifinals, in all likelihood, we're probably going to end up playing Orlando, Seattle, it's automatically. We're going to play Seattle, Orlando, or LAFC. But yes, MLS changed the bracket 5 damn times, and it drove me crazy.
I don't know why, you're shocked by this. This is the same league that did the draw straws for Jermaine Jones thing and then didn't let anyone watch them draw straws. And then the straws just happened to be drawn exactly how Don Garber wanted them drawn.
And then Charlie Davies and his Lucky Charms. Well, it's also my first year working with you guys, so I'm not as in tune with all the nitty-gritty with everything going on. I was just in college for 4 years, so I guess I'm going to keep learning about these kind of things that are going to happen throughout Major League Soccer even more.
Well, that's David Stern-level stuff right there, if you want to go back to old school, to the infamous 1985 NBA draft lottery.
Yeah, they're going to change the rules for the final. It's going to, we're going to end up having to play Seattle or somebody. And then they're going to say, oh, well, you only get one player for every letter of your team. So Crew, you get 4. Sounders, you get however many letters are in Sounders.
Don't you think, though, that somehow the final will be the LAFC, it'll be the freeway derby or whatever they call it. For some reason, it'll be LA Galaxy in the final.
Well,
based on goal differential and,
At the very least, it's not going to be Toronto against Seattle.
No, it's not. And I got to tell you guys, I was stunned at how bad Toronto played last night. And, you know, I think we could all agree that we enjoyed it. Toronto's a lovely city. I love Canada. The Toronto FC fan is the worst fan on the planet. There are a bunch of drunken ex-cons who come down here. Not right now, but so I was glad to see that. But I was also stunned at how poorly they played last night. They came out as if they couldn't have been bothered to. It's like, you know what? We're done with this bubble. This is boring. We don't want to play anymore. I mean, that was bad, right?
Yeah, and I think you saw that. I think a lot of people picked Toronto because they trusted this core that they've had for a long time. It includes Josie Altidore and includes Michael Bradley and a number of other guys. And I think what you're seeing is that these guys' time is coming to an end. I mean, I think we already knew that about Bradley and Altidore, having watched them play with the national team, that was going to start to wind down. But, you know, Josie's most productive thing he did was try and run a man over early in the game where he didn't even get a foul called. And Bradley gave the ball away multiple times, passing out of the back. He got better as the game went on, but those two aren't the same players that they once were. You know, Toronto looked a lot better when they had Akindele, I think is his name, up top.
Akinola,
that's it. Akindele is a different player. You know, a young, energetic guy who clearly is motivated to prove himself. I do like some of their pieces, but it's just not the same team anymore. And, you know, obviously this is what happens. You know, if you rely on that same core for long enough, they're eventually going to start to get old and it's going to start to peter out. So, you know, they've done a great job of building this. Now it's going to be about building a new core of guys, and the guy who built this, you know, team that made it to multiple finals now works for the Crew, as do two other people that were a big part of it. So that'll be interesting to see how they do it, as the Crew currently have those people on staff.
And Toronto's worst performance of the whole tournament gives New York EFC the big win that they desperately needed. You know, New York City have not looked good all of 2020. They just go out there and smash them 3-1, and now they're coming in with all the confidence in the world going into the quarters against either Portland or Cincy. So New York City might pull a Portugal out here and be a third place team that makes a run at winning a tournament. Now that they are through to the quarterfinals and Toronto decided to not care in the round of 16.
Well, and going back to Michael Bradley for 2 seconds, one of my favorite things about this is he's becoming legitimately terrible, and he just signed a 3-year contract, so they're stuck with him for a while. Nobody's going to pay Michael Bradley what TFC is paying him, and they might be stuck with him for a while, so that could be a fun thing to watch.
Well, I know they talked on the telecast last night about how New York was going to make his life difficult because they want to play through him still, transitioning from back to front. And they were talking about how New York really is like, well, let's just make sure that we're shadowing him and making it difficult for him to do the simple things that he wants to do. He's not looking to shoot. He's just looking to be the point guard. And they really messed that up for them last night.
And credit to New York, just the way that they pressed, or especially in the first half, you know, they just didn't let them play the way they normally want to. It almost looked like the Red Bulls with how they were pressuring. And, you know, I think they identified Michael Bradley as, hey, this is a guy that, you know, used to be able to play some risky balls and get away with it. Not so much anymore. And you saw in the first half, he gave a few away out of the back that nearly cost them. He wasn't the one that turned the ball over on the goal. But, you know, they could have been in a much worse place than down 1-0 at halftime.
Yeah, and his stats kind of tell the story. I mean, I have an app, FUTMob, that does ratings for players out of 10. He had a 5.1 rating with 79% pass accuracy, which for a central midfielder is kind of inexcusable, not to mention the fact that he only won 3 of his 10 duels. So very poor performance from the U.S. men's national team mainstay midfielder.
Between Atlanta being bad and Toronto FC being bad, you know, maybe this tournament's not so bad after all. You know,
yeah.
But Cincinnati,
But Cincinnati's
great. I put them third in my power ranking. Yeah, and Cincinnati won two games. I put Toronto third in my power ranking simply because offensively they looked fantastic, but I forgot how poor they were defensively against Montreal and D.C.
I actually like what's happening with Cincinnati because their fans had gone completely into the, like, we're going to lose 3-0 mode, you know, where they were bracing themselves for a loss all the time. But now they've got that hope back, which means that the hope can be crushed a second time. You know, it's right around the corner. It's right around the corner. We're just waiting for the shoe to drop because we all know how bad they are, but they don't know.
Oh, man. What if they –
Portland. I forgot that they're playing right after us tomorrow night at 10:30 against Portland. Is there any hope for Cincinnati that they can steal one?
I hope so.
Penalty shootout.
Yopstam should just play for penalties. Just have them put 11 men in the net. Just play for penalties. That would be
what they're going to do, right?
I mean, that's what they've done so far. You know, yeah. They've gotten lucky. Not necessarily lucky, but they've had – you know, one or two shots on goal in each of these wins and been able to score on them and then played, you know, 11 men behind the ball. And credit to them, I think, you know, credit where credit is due, I think, and they've talked about a lot on the broadcast, but Yopstam realized, hey, I can't play soccer with these guys. You know, this just isn't a talented team. And so get everyone to buy in, you know, play the guys that you know will buy in and just work hard defensively. And hope you can steal something. And that's exactly what they've done. And it's been a little fortunate to get those goals. But in a knockout round, I mean, that might work as well as anything. Just if you can steal a goal somehow on a counter or play for penalty kicks and hope for the best. You know, I think eventually luck runs out. And if there is any regular season, I don't think that really works. But, you know, I think you're seeing what the rebuild project is going to be for them to actually ever play some real soccer.
Yeah, I think back to when I was a kid, and there was a time when college basketball didn't have a shot clock, and teams that were at a distinct disadvantage would just pass the ball around. They'd play the four corners offense. Mm-hmm. And one time when Oregon State was really good and Stanford was really bad, Stanford decided that they were just going to take the air out of the ball, and they proceeded to pass the ball around the entire game. Oregon State won 18-16. So Stanford nearly pulled off a colossal upset by not playing basketball. So that's Cincinnati's only hope. It's going to be a dreadfully boring game. Hopefully Portland will just score like three goals right off the bat. So Cincinnati just at least has to come out and give out three or four more.
Yeah.
And be completely humiliated. I don't see any way that this isn't at least as ugly as the 4-0 Columbus Crew victory of them. There's no path to victory for Cincinnati here.
Agreed. Portland's probably been the second best team in the group stage. I mean, 7 points in one of the tougher groups, getting a big win against the Galaxy and then pulling away a draw against LAFC. But you mentioned the no shot clock basketball. Thank God Pep Guardiola wasn't managing, you know, Stanford or Utah back in the 70s in the NCAA tournament, because those games would have ended up being 1-0 on a free throw.
Oh, yeah.
If Cincinnati lose, do we think they're going to release a commemorative T-shirt for their group stage runner-up?
First COVID Cup loss.
Someone, yeah. It'd just be a picture of Jake Mulroney running into Waston for that red card.
If Yopstam wins, he ties for the most wins as a head coach in Cincinnati history.
Oh, my God.
Are you serious?
I am serious.
Yep.
My God.
With three. How many is it?
Three.
Well, God bless Yopstam. He knows.
And even better, the coach that currently has it is their assistant coach who was the interim.
Yeah.
Was that the guy that was the racist, or was that the guy that replaced the guy that was the racist?
He replaced the racist.
He replaced the racist? Okay.
How many wins did the racist have?
Two.
Who wins? That's my favorite line ever in the history of Master. I've been doing this show for I don't know how many years. How many wins does the racist have is my all-time favorite.
a 2020 line, to say the least.
That's going to make Morgan very sad.
And that's FC Cincinnati. That's the history. We've just covered the entire history and the future of FC Cincinnati, because tomorrow they are going to get their asses kicked. There's just no way around it. And you can't tell me otherwise. I know I predicted nothing but misery for them the last two games, but clearly this has got to be the moment. All right, the season is set to continue at some point. At some point, MLS would like to leave the bubble and have teams play in their own stadiums, right? But what we're seeing in Major League Baseball is a slowly unfurling disaster. Not maybe disaster is the wrong word, but in terms of sports, that you can see that they botched this thing so badly. And now we have 8 members of the Miami Marlins ill as we take this. There's other players. There's a couple of Cincinnati Reds. They had to cancel the Marlins Orioles game tonight. No big loss. But the Phillies couldn't play the Yankees either because the Phillies played them over the weekend. And now as you connect these teams together, it's only going to get worse.
Yeah,
and I see them pulling the plug in a week on this.
They might have to, but what's happening in the MLB is another great example of why shut down and why you have to socially distance, because if one person has COVID, it can spread to thousands of people. There's always patient zero, and that leads to patient 1,000, 1,000,000, 10 million. You have to maintain the social distance and the mask. And I don't see a way in the United States for the remainder of 2020 where you can really continue sports outside of a bubble unless you really tell the players, like, look, you need to be socially distanced, you have to wear a mask. Even so, you might not even be able to leave your house. But this, what's happening with the Marlins and Major League Baseball, you know, a couple Marlins players, it spreads throughout the Marlins team, that affects 4 teams, and then they have to delay games 2 weeks for the Marlins. That's going to affect the season. So this also grows a concern, not just for the MLS regular season, but for the NFL and college football and even college basketball. Can you even play sports in this country outside of a bubble? Because right now we're seeing the bubble works fantastically. NWSL just finished their Challenge Cup. Full month, 2,000-plus tests, not one positive. NHL, first week in Toronto-Edmonton bubbles, not one positive test. NBA, yeah, we're seeing Lou Williams, you know, and whatnot. Richaun Holmes get his DoorDash. But they have strict rules. People can't return to that bubble until they're quarantining themselves. And we're going to see that. And WNBA's bubble's working well. NBA's bubble's working too. And the MLS bubble has done really, really well since Nashville and Dallas dropped out. No positive tests recently. So to me, with what's happening in the MLB, I don't see any way you can play home games in stadiums in Major League Soccer if there's going to be a regular season in the calendar year of 2020.
Has the commissioner's office said anything about what they might be thinking? And, you know, I've been an outspoken critic of Don Garber's leadership, but in this particular case, I get it. You're just trying to figure it out as you go along. Have they given us any indication of their thinking?
Well, The Athletic reported the other day, I want to say it was last Friday, they came out with a story that detailed what, and we've talked about it a little bit here, you know, they'd like to play roughly 18 games afterwards. They would play in home stadiums. Now, the issue would be the Canadian teams right now, specifically Toronto. Can they play there? Would they have to play somewhere else? And that's kind of the idea. There'd be 2 weeks between the MLS's back tournament and the start of this season. It would be an expanded playoffs that would all be one game. So they have an idea. But as Ori pointed out, there needs to be a plan B, or at least the willingness to say, hey, this isn't going to work. We're just going to have to call it because, you know, you're seeing the issues with the MLB. I will say that the USL Championship is doing the same thing. Now, they have had to reschedule some games, but it hasn't been as bad, I don't believe. Now, I haven't followed it closely. But from my understanding, what they're doing is chartering in day of game, playing the game, chartering out. So they're spending as little time as possible in the city, and you know, kind of dealing with it as best as possible. But yeah, it's certainly a tricky situation, and MLS needs to have a plan if you know, a plan in case something like this happens, if they do even attempt to try it playing at home stadiums.
They will 100% play additional games because the Crew are in first place for the supporter shield, and they will not let us have that. Yep.
So that's why they're going to keep playing until
no matter how many people have to suffer for it. Don Garber's going to schedule.
Once Crew drops into second, then boom, season. They call it. Yeah. Okay, yeah, it's done.
There's probably some like strange supporter shield rule that you don't know about yet. That like you have to play X amount of games for it to count, and so you otherwise can just enact that.
Yeah. Otherwise, it goes to the defending champion or something like that.
Yeah.
LAFC game supporter shield.
That's the other thing that I haven't seen addressed, and maybe you guys have, but Dallas and Nashville did not participate in this tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Knockout stage, that counts in the standings. What are they saying, if anything, about that?
Yeah, that was in the Athletic article, that they would play three additional games against each other. Is the idea, which, I mean.
Well, they can do that now if they're all sick.
COVID right? Derby.
Yeah.
This whole thing is just so surreal. Like, the fact that we're talking. Like,
everything is surreal, Alex. We're living in a simulation.
Yeah. They're going to have like, MLS. By the end of this, it's going to be, like, all the MLS teams that are healthy. And then there's going to be, like, a little MLS Cup knockout tournament for all the teams that got so sick that they couldn't do it. And then are we going to, like, is the final match for MLS Cup going to be, like, the healthy versus the sick?
Or unhealthy?
Well, we see the fun, the big bouncy bubbles that people wear and play soccer. We could just see that. That would be safe. Right.
Honestly, you know, that might make things easier. The referees, every time, you know, any crew player would, you know, graze another, you know, bubble, they would immediately give a yellow card. And it'd be an easier way to kind of just knock the crew out, for sure.
Well, I'm excited for tomorrow night's match. I've sort of learned to not look too far into the future because, let's face it, we don't know diddly about anything, right? So let's just enjoy the match tomorrow. Hopefully get a knockout stage win. Let's give our picks and then wrap things up here in another edition of the Massive Report Podcast. I'll start at the bottom of my screen with Bart.
I'm going to go with the crew in this one, guys. Here's what I will give you. Minnesota is going to get a couple. You're going to get two goals. You're going to get one from one Ethan Finley, and you're going to get one from big salary Aaron Schoenfeld. but crew are going to come in and win 3-2. We'll get a Lucas goal in there. I think we'll get a Josh Williams goal. Why not?
All right. Fair enough. He was our leading scorer for a while last season. We should see him on the score sheet. So how about ZZ Top, one from each, and then Josh Williams, 3-2.
Yeah, that's perfect.
All right.
Well, first off, Aaron Schoenfeld is my boy, so I won't hear any ill will towards
him. I love Aaron.
I know. I love him. He's a fellow chosen person. He played in Israel for so long. So I'm a big Aaron Schoenfeld guy. So we had to point that out. But I also got to point out, guess who was the one that picked 1-0 and got bombarded? Oh, you hate the crew. Yeah, guess what? I got my pick right. So I'm going to get my pick right again this week and say Columbus wins 2-0, simply for the reason that this is the best defense in the tournament. I think also the best defense in the league. And a lot of the times in these tournaments, whenever a defense gels, they can be able to just win games on their own by stopping the attack. And the fact that defensively we've seen three different combinations of back lines, Jonathan Mensah leading all the guys that he plays with, is a huge confidence boost, I think, towards a crew victory. And you bring Lucas Zelarayán back into the starting lineup. His dynamic playmaking ability in central attacking midfield, I think, is going to push the crew to a quarterfinal appearance. And then we'll have to see if we play San Jose or Salt Lake. At the time recording, that game hasn't started. So I'm going 2-0 crew. I don't hate the crew, guys.
Patrick.
Well, if we're tooting our horns, I wrote about bold predictions for this tournament and said that the crew wouldn't give up a goal in the group stage. So I was right on that. Apparently not so bold. Though I also said they would struggle offensively and they scored 7 goals. So not so right on that one. As for this game, I think, as Ori said earlier, Caleb Porter said this will be their toughest test. And I completely agree. I think when we look back on this tournament, you know, later on or next year, I think we'll say that this was a very weak Atlanta and New York team. And obviously we know what FC Cincinnati is. So I think the crew have benefited from that. But with that said, I think this is a very good crew team. And I think you're going to continue to see that throughout this tournament. And, you know, if there is any sort of season afterwards, I think they've got something here with the way they're playing defense and the creative players they've got, the way they can possess the ball. I think Minnesota's going to give them a game. I think it'll be the most interesting from a neutral perspective of the crew games. And not in the way that Atlanta was, where things just kind of went sideways. I think that it'll be a little back and forth. You'll get to see both teams kind of operate on the counter at times with using their speed. But I said in our predictions today that crew will win 2-1. I'll stick with that.
Okay. Alex?
So I think, I know there's been a lot of talk about Aaron Schoenfeld. I kind of think Josh Williams and Aaron are going to kind of work something out before the game starts. You know, I think Aaron really belongs back in black and gold. So I think there might be some discussions around trying to re-sign him. I think it's going to be 1-1 going into the 80th minute. They're going to sub on big salary, try to be a penalty guy, and he's going to intentionally own goal it on a corner kick. 2-1 victory for the Crew.
Then Schoenfeld replaces Adi, just flies back with Crew after the tournament.
Straight swap right after the game.
All right. I'm going to say, it's kind of a tough one. I'm kind of leaning towards Bart's kind of crazy game. But then again, we've been so good defensively. I just don't. I'm going to say 3-0 Crew.
Love it.
3-0. There we go. All right, fellas, Bart, Ori, Pat, Alex, I'm Brian. Thanks so much for listening to another edition of the Match Report Podcast. Tomorrow night, Minnesota and the Crew in the knockout stage. Hopefully we'll be talking about a further match in the MLS's back tournament. We're pretty confident. Hopefully you are too, and enjoy the game tomorrow night. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we'll see you next week on the Match Report Podcast.